Yo, Black Lives Matter, right?
I'm just looking for a job.
Jobs are for capitalist slaves.
It's with the blue hair from Tig.
I don't answer the patriarchy.
Why do you hate men so much?
Because, like, all men are sexist pigs. I deserve to die!
Next!
What do you love the most?
Beer, beef, and Jesus.
Next!
Why are most blacks so immoral?
I know you didn't just say that.
Where are you going? Hey! Why do you still live with your parents?
No platform for fascists! No platform for fascists! No platform for fascists!
If you're so proud of Mexico, then why are you still here? This is ridiculous.
There's gotta be a better way to find gas.
If you strongly disagree with me, and you are a good debater, and if you live in the LA area and would like to be on the Fall Estate, go to thefallestate.tv.
Come join us on the Fall Estate!
My friend is in a dilemma. He wants to know whether or not he should follow his dream or do the responsible thing. You know what college is. You know what's going to happen for the most part, right? What do? You go to class, you drink, you party, you hang out in your dorm room, and you eat shitty food in the cafeteria. You know what's going to happen. You go to Nashville, Tennessee, bro, and you lose all your money trying to achieve your dream. You don't know what's going to happen. You might end up living in a van and meeting a homeless Rastafarian. And he introduces you to organic food. And you fall in love with growing your own organic food. And you decide you want to move to Jamaica and grow weed and grow organic food and grow dreadlocks. And you love your life. And you have a beautiful wife. And you play the guitar. The joy in life is in the question, is in the mystery, is in the void.
Yo, Elliot.
Welcome to the Fall Estate. I'm Jesse Lee Peterson. Today I'm joined by a YouTube creator who is making a major impact. I have with me strength coach and entrepreneur Elliot Hulse. He is the founder of Strength Camp Gym in St. Petersburg, Florida. His YouTube channel have over 2.5 million combined subscribers. Were you surprised at the reaction to your YouTube channel?
Yeah, absolutely. I started using YouTube as a way to get more people to join my fitness programs. So I'd record the guys doing the workouts, and I'd do testimonials, and I just put them up on YouTube. And I started to notice that people were asking me questions. So I just answered the questions, and I started making YouTube videos in 2007, and between 2012 and 2015, my channel went viral just by answering questions, fitness questions for young men.
And so, what made you decide to open your own gym? You're walking down the road one day, you're like, there's an empty building, I'm going to do a gym.
Well, when I was very young, my uncle lived with us, and my uncle was a black belt in Kung Fu. He was a martial artist, he ran marathons, and he taught my brother and I how to do push-ups and sit-ups, how to work out when we were very young, like 4 years old.
Oh, okay.
Then he left and came back when I was in high school and I wanted to play football, and he started to teach us how to lift with barbells. And the first time I picked up a barbell and started building my body, I fell in love with it and I knew it was what I wanted to do for the rest of my life.
That's amazing, man. Mm-hmm. How that happened that way, that's something
yeah.
else.
I started out at the back of my van. I was training people in the city parks with trash. I'd get like tires and sandbags and used equipment, and I'd dump it all out in the park, and I called it strength camp because I was teaching guys how to get stronger out there in the park with it. And then that slowly evolved into a warehouse gym, a warehouse that I rented, and now we're in an 8,000 square foot location.
What's the importance of strength coaching?
Oh, wow. Well, I've discovered just through myself first, that when I dedicated myself to building up my body, all of a sudden, my character was changing. I was 14 years old, and I wasn't doing very well in school, and I was getting in trouble, and I never really did so well on tests. Like, I would study, but I wouldn't get a return on my investment. But when I started lifting, all of a sudden, I put two and two together. I was getting a return on my investment, and so
So what made you decide to go to college if you were not doing so well?
Football.
Oh, football.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You played football.
Mm-hmm.
And what did you play? What position?
I was recruited as a nose guard, believe it or not. I was undersized, but because I'm so quick, I led the team in sacks. I led the league in sacks, the conference. And then by my junior year, all the running backs were injured, and I was the fastest, was one of the fastest. I think I was the second fastest guy on the team playing defensive line. So they decided, let's give this kid the ball. And so I led the team in touchdowns and sacks.
Really?
That year. Mm-hmm.
Why do you go pro?
It just wasn't the plan. I really wanted to. I made videos and I sent them out. Back then it was VHSs. And no one really responded to me. You know, I think more than anything, it was just a matter of I was undersized for the position I was playing. And so it didn't work out that way.
Were you disappointed?
No, I wasn't disappointed because I had a lot of other things going for me also, too.
That's important, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Today, folks, we're going to work on the guns a little bit. It's a straight-up gun day. Taking them out the holster, bolting them up. And I'm going to begin with biceps. And I got to be completely honest with you, biceps has never been my favorite exercise to do. Kind of strange, you know, as a strong man, always had a strong grip. Anybody who's done strong man, you know it's about grip and low back. You got a strong grip and strong low back, you can lift odd objects, kegs, things of that nature. But never really much curls, and I guess maybe that's, I tore both biceps, maybe that's a reason why. And maybe I should have spent more time working my biceps. But I'm going to do that now, and I'm going to try my best to get a hyperstimulation, get those muscles feeling pumped. We're going to start with some straight-up dumbbell curls.
What was your upbringing? You were raised by your father and mother?
Yes.
And what was that like for you?
It was great. My parents are from Belize.
Oh, yeah?
And so I'm first-generation American. I'm the oldest of four children.
Are you mixed?
Yeah. Belize is a country where there was a lot of mixing going on. So my father's grandfather, if you look at my father's black like you, same color, he's got
black as the ace of spades.
My dad is black, but his grandfather was white, and his grandmother was a tall African woman, apparently. And so they got together, and that's my father's side. And then my mother's side, she's like Mayan or like native, and then and European, Spanish.
So your father is black?
In Belize, they call you Creole, which means mixed.
Oh, so your father's Creole.
Mm-hmm.
So do people get you mixed up? They think you're white?
Oh, yeah, I get mixed up all the time. I mean, they called me confused when I was a kid. You know, all the names like Oreo and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
So when you were growing up, the black kids didn't, or the white kids didn't know if you were black or white?
Yeah, they were often asked, like, Elliot, what are you? That was a question.
Were you hated by the blacks because you look white?
It's interesting. The kids, yes. It was strange. And then I go places, and you know, if it was majority black boys, there would be those that just didn't like me. You know, that wanted to fight me. I couldn't figure out why. I didn't know why at the time. And then with the white kids never really picked on me or bothered me. But the parents, the girls that I used to like to date, because I like to date white girls.
Right.
They disapproved.
So
I got disapproval from, you know, both sides.
Was it hard on you?
Yeah, I struggle with knowing who I am.
Yeah.
My dad would tease me. He's like, you figure out who you are yet?
Yeah.
But like, yeah, I spent a lot of time trying to find out who I am.
I mean, when you say who you are, do you mean like what race you belong to or mm-hmm. that kind of stuff?
Right. Well, it went from what are you, because I did some, when I was very young, they would ask me, like, what are you? And I found myself in the library one day in the philosophy section for the first time, and it was a book called What Are You Really? And it was written by a philosopher and a quantum physicist. And I started reading the book, and that's when I transcended my racial identity. I realized that we're spirit, and that, you know, when this guy spoke about quantum physics, and so that it went from what are you to, you know, who are you? My essence.
But in a physical sense, growing up, you didn't fit in with the whites or the blacks.
Nah, not really. I always felt a little.
What is that feeling? What does that feel like growing up with that?
It was challenging. It was challenging, and probably more challenging for me just not knowing where I fit in. You know, yeah. I bounced back from group to group. I grew up in a mixed community, and you know, you had Haitians, Jamaicans, Irish, Jewish, Italians, Mexicans, Puerto Rican, Dominican, and everybody kind of like knew where they fit.
Yeah.
And here I am, not only just mixed, because you know, I could look like I'm Puerto Rican, but I'm not Puerto Rican, I don't speak Spanish.
Right.
And I come from a country that was pretty obscure, Belize. I remember being in like third grade and the teacher's going around the room, we're talking about heritage and stuff like that. I said, my family's from Belize. And the teacher just straight up told me, there's no such thing, son. So not only do I not know where I am racially, but like, I had to go home and ask my parents, like, did you lie to me about where we're from? So it was a little bit of confusion.
And so are you completely over that now?
Yes.
Do you, so while, when you first started dating, did you date black and whites and everything, or just whites?
I did both when I was very young. And then I met my wife when we were 14, and I've been with her. She's white. I've been with her since then.
What's the difference between dating white girls and black girls?
I only dated one black girl, so I really can't give you that kind of contrast. I don't know.
You were like, one is enough.
No. She was great.
You were like, nope, this is not the way to go for sure. No, I'm kidding. And so, do you recommend interracial dating and baby making?
My experience now as an adult has been positive. I could see the challenge. I experienced the challenge of being an interracial child. But I also believe, too, that we're living in a world that is integrating, and that maybe we could represent something that transcends the racial divide.
So would you recommend interracial dating, marriage, and making interracial babies?
Yes.
Because those kids are going to suffer, too.
They are. That's bearing our cross, you know, so...
But it's like creating a suffering for them, intentionally doing it, especially knowing that you went through it, you know what it's like. Mm-hmm. And like, and you know if they didn't interracially mix, they wouldn't have that particular issue.
Wouldn't have had that issue, but I also wouldn't have all the blessings that I've had because of it also, too.
And so you think by creating kids like that intentionally, they're going to have blessings from it?
I was able to see the blessings in it.
Do you talk to your kids about this?
My kids look white. You know, my kids come in here, you just think that they're white kids.
So they just fit in with white people?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's amazing. So how would you, you know, I'm looking at your videos, I see you giving out this advice, right? How would you describe yourself? What type of person are you?
Oh. I am self-starting, rebellious, empowering, excitable, exciting. I have a lot of compassion for people. I love myself. I have an expansive mindset and consciousness. I love God. I love people. I love the world. Limitless.
Are you a Christian?
What do you mean by that?
What do I mean? Are you a Christian?
Mm-hmm.
There's a religion called Christianity. Mm-hmm. You know, they have Buddha. They have Japanese, whatever they believe in. And they have Mexican religions, which is Catholic, I think, and they have Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever heard of Christianity?
Yeah, I've heard of it. Only thing is that there have been so many different variations of it.
Oh, well, I just simply asked. I don't have anything particular in mind.
I believe in and love Christ and his redemptive power, but I've rejected the malignant tribalism and separation and schisms within his church and the people.
Even if you dissect the cross, Christians who like to believe that great Lord is gonna come from the sky, come down and make everything be all right. That's Bob Marley. He's telling you it's bullshit when he says that shit too. Our vertical nature is concomitant with our horizontal nature. That's the true story of the cross. That's the true story of death and rebirth and resurrection. It's recognizing that center point, that axis mundi, that you are Christed, you are godlike. We are made in the likeness and image, but we fucking shit, just like an animal. Never forget that, right? No matter how much they tell you you're a bad boy for playing with your balls.
So are you a Christian?
Yes and no.
Yes and no? Mm-hmm. You go in and out of it?
Well,
what do you mean by yes and no?
Being of even mixed race, I'd never been labeled. And as much as I craved labels, Later in my life, I recognized the limitation of labels. And so to call myself a something is just something that I've just stayed away from.
But to say that you believe in Christ, right?
Yes.
But that's laboring.
It's my belief in Christ.
But that still, you're giving it a title which identifies what you do and who you are and how you believe.
Mm-hmm. I also
have you been disappointed in Christianity? That's what it is? So you kind of don't want to be identified with it?
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, now maybe that's it.
You haven't had good, righteous Christian examples while growing up?
Right. A lot of, where you say one thing and then you do another.
Yeah, I understand
that. So I was turned off by that.
But don't blame Christianity for that. That's the people, mm-hmm. not Christianity itself.
Yeah, you're right.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So you work on the outer strength of human beings. How about the inner strength? Do you work on that with them as well?
That's my favorite part.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
And how do you help them in that way?
A lot of encouragement, empowerment, letting people know that we are beyond the flesh. Our power is a spiritual power. And so when we're building up the body, we're also building up the character, we're building up your way of presenting yourself and carrying yourself and being in the world. And that's really what's more important. It's not so much the bigger biceps, but it's the confidence, it's the courage, it's the belief in yourself.
Yeah. How do you know that your spirit is being built up? How do you know for sure it's happening to you?
Same way I know in the gym that I confront resistance. The only way you're going to get stronger in the gym is through resistance training.
Right.
And when you face that resistance, sometimes you fail. But then when it comes again, if you're consistent, you can overcome it. And so I experience the same thing spiritually, meaning like when resistance comes, I recognize it for what it is. I like to say God is like the strength coach.
Right.
And he's placing some resistance in my way, not to beat me down or to make my life miserable, but to make me stronger the same way I help people in the gym.
Are your parents Christians?
My parents are Catholic. I was raised Catholic.
Oh, okay. I saw that you work with men. And I saw one video where you were saying that there's a difference between men and women or something like that, right?
Oh, yes.
And what's the difference between men and women?
Well, everything in the manifest world shows up in polarity. There's the law of gender. And you see it everywhere from the technology and how we have power comes from the digital world comes from the zero and the one, the night and the day. It's just, all these opposites. So men and women are the physical incarnation of that.
And so what does that mean, though? Because a lot of people believe and have been taught that there's no difference, other than body parts, of course, there's no difference between men and women. What do you say to that?
Well, there absolutely is a difference.
And what are in layman's term, what are the differences?
If you just look at the qualities, I think one of the best examples or symbols that encapsulates masculine and feminine, is the yin yang, or the Tai Chi symbol, the black and the white. But within the black is the white dot, and within the white is the black dot. And if you take a look at the masculine side of things, the masculine energy, it's aggressive. It reaches out. It's masculine energy is like the sun. It penetrates. It reaches out. Where feminine energy is, and you can even look at the organ, the penis reaches out, the vagina receives. And so the woman or the female is more receptive, more yielding.
So are men givers and women are takers or receivers?
I would say receivers. I see where you're going, but yeah, the giver and the receiver.
All right. Mm-hmm. So are men the head of women?
How do you mean by that?
Since they are the givers and the women are receivers, mm-hmm. the men would have to be the head, right?
Yes.
In order to pass down too.
100%. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Okay. A lot of people don't accept that nowadays. Mm-hmm. What do you say to them?
Well, it causes a lot of problems in their relationships. Yeah. I've been with my wife since we were 14 years old. We're turning 40 this year. It's been a long time.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and we love each other
How
more.
How long have you been married?
I want to say 20 years, 23.
And so are you the head of your wife?
Yes. If you mean, if by head you mean leader.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like the love that she receives come from you.
Yes.
And the instructions come from you.
Yes.
Does she obey you?
She loves to. Yes.
She loves obeying
you? She could
you?
Because she trusts me.
Right on. Yeah. Are you a good man?
I'm a good man.
Have you always been a good man?
I've always been a good man, but I've made some bad choices in my life.
Right. You
know, I made mistakes.
Right.
But I know my heart is pure and my heart is good.
You seem like a good man.
Thank you.
Yeah. So let me ask about bodybuilding, and then I want to get to something. When people, so were you, did you compete as a bodybuilder at one point?
No, I competed as a professional strongman.
Oh, okay.
So I pull the trucks and flip the tires and lift the stones.
Really?
Yeah.
So there's a difference between, between just being a bodybuilder and posing and a strongman.
Bodybuilder is about aesthetics, the way you look. So you stand up here and, you know, you flex your muscles.
Right.
And just strongman is all about how quickly can you move this heavy weight? Get it from here to there.
Oh, that's interesting. So the workout would be different then, right?
Mm-hmm. It's more athletic. Bodybuilders are about refining the way their body looks. They're very good look. They look much more aesthetic than a strongman. Strongman could just be a big mountain of a man.
Oh, I see.
But a bodybuilder would have definition.
Yeah. Who is more beta? The strongman or the bodybuilder?
Bodybuilder.
And why is that?
Because he is subject to the opinions of the people that are leering upon him.
Oh, yeah.
So he's got to receive their judgment.
That's amazing.
Where a strong man is very clear. You pick it up, you move it there, you win.
So you can move a heavy truck right now?
Depending on the truck.
What's the most weight you moved?
I've moved a lot of weight, but in terms of like keeping track, my heaviest deadlift was around 700 pounds.
Really?
Mm-hmm. But with strongmen, because they're odd objects, really don't even know what you're lifting sometimes. Like it, they say this tire weighs 1,000 pounds and you got to flip it 10 times. So like if you add that up, you know, it's quite a bit.
Be when if they want to get into strength training?
A young man at the age of 14, that's what I was and that's what I recommend. So when kids come to my gym, you know, if they're a little young, I tell their parents, let them come back when they're 14. That's when the testosterone starts coming up and they really bud and skyrocket fast then.
I saw a video where you recommend, where you were discussing sex. Should men have sex before marriage?
I don't think so any longer. And you know, I have to be honest, my experience, if I wasn't having sex with my wife when we were young, we might not be together right now.
Right.
You know, so I can't say that it's all bad. But I have three daughters now, and I want to protect them. And I also think, you know, you said, what is it when a man that's out there, you were speaking to a young woman and she's, when a man's out there having a lot of sex, what is he? He's a slut maker. And I think that's just as bad as being a slut, because if we respect and love our women, then we wouldn't treat them that way.
Did you get your slut maker t-shirt yet?
No. I can't wait, though. Yeah, so I think it's upon us, too, especially if we're the head, if we're the leaders, then we're the ones to hold up the standard.
And so you recommend that men not have sex until marriage?
It would be best.
And why is it best?
Because, well, we could look at it just in the most physical term. If you are having sex and you get a young woman pregnant, then and you're out of wedlock, well, then you set yourself up on a course that will be quite challenging. Yeah. It can be challenging. She may or may not want to be with you. She may or may not even want to have the child, and now you're having to deal with that.
Yeah, a lot of problems. So, mm-hmm. Also, you become emotional attached to the person, too.
Ah, yes.
And you think that that's love, but it's really an addiction, no different than doing drugs or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I got addicted to my wife very early on.
And that's why you say that if you and your wife had not been having sex, you might not have gotten married because you would not have been addicted to her.
Right.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. Have you had that conversation with her?
Yeah.
How did that turn out?
She gets it. She knows.
She does?
She's like, she knew what she was doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny. We joke about it now because we were very unconscious when we were young. We were just doing whatever. But now in retrospect, we both look back and we're like, yeah, I was addicted to your sex.
Yeah.
That's why I, you know, couldn't get rid of you. But I'm so happy now. Meaning like my life, I couldn't have scripted it any better way.
What's the one thing that changed your life that made you feel that way about it?
It's been progress, so, you know, over the years. You know, just like with strength, you know, you add a little bit of weight here and there through the resistances. We've been together a long time, so we've had enough, I don't want to say struggles, but we've had enough circumstances where we can grow stronger through them.
And do your relationship is not a mother and son relationship? You're the son and she's your mother?
No.
Good. Mm-hmm. You've seen that before?
Yes.
When men become boys with their wives?
And I have been there, too.
You have?
I think, you know, like I said, there were times where I was unconscious. And I look back now and I'm like, yeah, I was projecting my mommy issues upon her.
Yeah.
But I've let that go.
Good, man. I declare August as Men History Month because men are under attack, and especially straight, white, or black conservative Christian men of power. Do you agree with that?
Yes.
And what do you think about my Men's History Month to bring attention to that?
I hope it sticks. Yeah. I like it. I'll celebrate along with you.
So when you first heard it, you were like, what was your first, you remember what you first thought about that and the way you felt about it?
Yes.
Oh, really?
I felt great about it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I agree with you that more attention needs to be paid to the healing of the man, to heal the family, to heal the world.
That's right. You talk about alpha and beta males on your YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. Which are you?
Alpha.
You're alpha. And why do you say you are?
Because I say I am.
Oh, yeah? Mm-hmm. And what is an alpha male? How would one know that he is an alpha male?
Stand by your word. Believe in yourself. Say it with your chest, put your foot down, believe it, have no reservations, no turning back. It's a matter of conviction.
And were you a beta male at one point?
Yes.
And what was that like? Describe being a beta male.
Let me think it back to when I was behaving in a beta way to be able to answer that. Anytime I let or have let someone their fears and limitations guide or sway my choices and behavior.
Yeah.
In this hope to be congenial and friendly, you know, live in a world that makes, when we go to school, we're taught how to be beta. That's like the whole programming. So a lot of times where I have an aggressive, outgoing, expressive attitude, I want to speak up, I want to be aggressive, but then I would have, I'm going to hold myself back, and I'm going to, even if I don't believe in or like what's going on, I would have, you know, shut my mouth.
That's amazing. And so are you completely over that now?
Yes.
You are. And how did you get over that? How were you able to overcome it?
I love myself. I don't judge myself. I used to judge myself and have evaluations about I should or I shouldn't. But I stopped doing that.
Do you have fear?
I don't.
You have no fear?
No.
Do you have anger?
I've had a lot of anger. Anger has been the driving force behind a lot of what I did. You know, so when you ask fear, sometimes it's anger manifests as fear. But I've really confronted that tremendously these past like 4 years in my life. I really like what you say about, you know, coming home to the parents. And these past few years have really brought me home, particularly to my father.
Did you go and forgive your father?
Yes.
You did. You went to him?
Yes.
How did that go?
My dad is cool. He's just like, I don't know what the hell you need to forgive me for. I didn't do that wrong, but that's all right. I love you, son. And that was his attitude. My dad's pretty alpha, too. So he's like, all right, whatever.
And how about your mother? Did you go and forgive her?
Yes.
You went to your mother?
Mm-hmm.
And how did that go?
It was similar in the same way, you know, where she was like, oh, okay, cool. You know,
what did you say to her?
I said, Mom, I want you to know that I forgive you and any anger or animosity that I've had towards you in the past. And she knows, my mom carries a lot of guilt, and I know a lot of my anger was from her.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I could press on all of the things, but she knows. And so I didn't dig too deep. But
were you nervous?
No.
Was she surprised?
No. Because
she wasn't surprised when you came and said, hey, I'm sorry for resenting
you?
No,
because I think it just made perfect sense. Her mother passed recently, and she carried a lot of anger to her mother. And I was the one that came to her and said, Ma, this was years ago. It would be a good idea if you forgave your mom before she passed. So she knew that I was in this forgiving mood. She knew that I believed that forgiveness was important. But I never actually, I didn't even see how I was carrying animosity and her anger in me.
Yeah.
And when I was finally able to see it, which was very recently, thanks to watching some of your videos, it was like a light was shown on me, and I realized, well, that's all my mom's anger. Yeah. That doesn't belong to me. And at that point, I was able to go to her,
man,
and say.
That's important, too, because you're married now, you have children, and you don't want to pass that down to them.
No, and it's almost scary because, like, I look back now, I'm like, there are certain times where I was doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. You can't help it when you have that spirit. Mm-hmm. That's amazing. Did you go back and apologize to your kids?
I've apologized to my wife, my children. When I've acted out, I apologize almost immediately. Yeah. You know, I tell them that's my black wolf, my mean wolf, when I come out and they get to see my anger. But they also know that their dad has a warm, soft, loving heart.
What do you think would happen if all of a sudden men woke up and became men? What would happen to the world?
There would be a lot of breakdown. We'd see a lot of what we're seeing right now in the world, except it would be accelerated because we wouldn't stand for what we see.
Absolutely.
We wouldn't just lay down and allow these things to happen.
That is so true. I wanted to ask you about MGTOW?
Yes, MGTOW.
MGTOW, mm-hmm. Men going their own ways. Mm-hmm. You did a video on them, popular video too. What should you tell us about your impression of them?
Well, you know, I was really drawn to it because I had been looking into this concept of male initiation for the past few years and how our ancestors treated our young men in order to bring them from childhood into adulthood. And cross-culturally, there are some typical themes that you see. And the main theme that you see is separation from the mother and atonement with the father. So no matter how they go about it, there has to be a separation from the world of the woman, the world of the mother, the world of even civilization and society.
Right.
So when I heard about men going their own way, the very first thing that came to my mind was, yes, this is very much needed because you often say that we've got a bunch of mama's boys. Well, yeah, they're projecting their mama boy issues upon their women. So yeah. The very first thing that must happen is a separation. You guys got to get away from the situation altogether, come to know yourself, and then come to know your true essence before wanting to go back into the society and be with women.
But these guys, I think, don't want to deal with women at all, right?
Well,
they don't want to deal with.
I listened to an interview with a guy who's, I guess, one of the leaders in this, and he's got a blow up doll. And that's the closest he'll come to being with a woman.
Really?
So he basically have just sworn off women completely.
And what do you think about that?
That's unfortunate. You know, yeah, what a shame.
Do you think that they should not deal with women at all, or?
I think the separation is good, but it's not enough. What needs to happen is an atonement with the father, coming into their truth and standing on their ground, becoming more alpha. And that way, they can go back. I say if you separate, good, but then go back, and now you're a new person. And so you'll be able to, women will appreciate you more, and you'll be in better relation to them for yourself.
I don't understand how you're going to grow if you don't deal with women.
Right.
Because women make you grow.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
We're one half of a whole.
They give you pure hell, and you overcome it or you die.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why we come here.
So you stood up for Alex Jones in a video after he was banned from social media platforms. Mm-hmm. What made you stand up for Alex Jones?
Freedom of speech. I love America. I love the Constitution. I love liberty. I love what this country stands for.
Yeah.
And so when I see things like that, it just, it's kind of a slap in the face of why my parents sacrificed to come here.
Yeah, that's amazing. I was surprised that they banned him completely like that.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think that that was going to happen. Hopefully it'll turn out for the good.
Big tech companies are purging conservatives. They're shadow banning people en masse.
Right, well, my broader concern is that what we are trying to do in terms of preventing foreign interference in our elections, that technology could be used by authoritarian governments.
But what about the Democrats purging conservatives?
She's
not answering. Just the Republicans are acting like it isn't happening. Thank God Trump is. Oh yeah, it's really weird. There's no purge of conservatives. There's no shadow banning.
Everybody should be. There's a look.
It's happening here. It's happening here. But you say I don't exist.
I just don't know who you are, man. I don't know your website.
Sure. And they demonize me in these very hearings. And then he plays dumb. Marco Rubio the snake. Little frat boy here.
All right, man.
Yeah.
Well, who are you? Who
yeah, sure.
I swear to God, I don't know.
You better hope
you're
deplatforming. Tens of millions of views. He knows who InfoWars is. Playing this joke over here. That's why the deplatforming didn't work.
Don't touch me again, man.
You're not going to silence me. You're not going to silence America.
Wait, but there are
you are literally like a little gangster thug.
And so have you gotten into backlash for standing up for Alex?
Comments on the YouTube video, but that doesn't affect me.
Right, like, can you remember some of the negative things they said? Or positive things?
Well, some of the negative things. People, when you're a public figure, people project their perfection upon you.
Yeah.
And so they're hoping that I will be a certain way. They want me to be more like them or think like them or behave like them and hold their values. So a lot of it is like heartbreaking for people to see or to hear, like, oh, Elliot disagrees with me or Elliot has a different opinion than me. So a lot of their lashing out is because they feel personally threatened by my standing on my,
that's so
my
true.
Own feet.
That's so interesting to me that they won't let you be you and they be whomever they are and have their own opinion. They are affected by the way you think and what you feel.
Mm-hmm.
That's a weakness.
Mm-hmm.
Beta.
Yeah, looking outside yourself for validation.
Yeah. And so by having such a large following and a strong following, were you concerned about going, you know, becoming so political?
No, I never had been. I mean, I was a big Ron Paul fan back in 2008 and 2012 when he was running. So I spoke out a lot about my positions on liberty and freedom.
Did you vote for the president?
No, I didn't.
The Great White Hope?
No.
You did not?
Mm-mm.
Did you vote?
No.
And why not?
I got to be completely honest, I was a big Ron Paul fan, like I said. I became a libertarian, and then I became a Republican so that I could vote for him in the primaries. And when Obama won again for the second time, I had just become completely disillusioned. And I basically just checked out. It was like, all right, the American people don't want truth, and so I'm not going to bother. Now that I see where the country is and that when he became president, I cheered.
Right.
You know, I was happy that it was him. Otherwise, we'd be in more perpetual wars right now.
Right.
And, you know, our country wouldn't be in a very good place. And apparently, he's doing a pretty good job. You know, jobs are coming back. And
so you're happy with him now?
I approve.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what do you think when I call him the Great White Hope?
I think that's great.
And so you agree with me that things are getting better as a result of having him there?
If we can get past what the media is telling us and look to the statistics and the truth and the numbers, yeah, he's doing a fantastic job.
Yeah. Why do you think they hate him so much? I call them the children of the lie. The liberal media, the Democratic Party, the rhino Republicans, the never Trumpers. Why do they hate this one man so much?
I think because he represents entrepreneurship and business, and they represent the scholarly class. I think a lot of it's jealousy. The way he's able to stand his ground and make his point and to be as alpha as he is,
yes,
is threatening to them.
Yes.
So they make him out to be crazy and racist and all kinds of things.
You know that we started White History Month.
Mm-hmm.
July is White History Month.
Mm-hmm.
And did you know about that?
Yes.
And what do you think of that?
I think that's pretty cool. That's half of my heritage right there.
Yeah. And so when you first heard about that, your first impression was what? Wow, White History Month. And what did you think about that?
Well, if it came from a white person, I might have not been nearly as excited as it coming from you. And to hear what you had to say, just make you, because you're black, my ears were more open. And my heart was more open to receive what you were saying. And so it was able to penetrate. So you're doing a tremendous, you're doing a lot of good because of, you know, the fact that you're black and that you're promoting truth that happens a lot of times to be what's happening with white people.
Why wouldn't you have received it in the same way, if it was the same words, the same purpose from a white person?
Because it wouldn't have shocked me to pay attention as much.
Oh, I see.
You know what I'm saying? I would have seen it and I wouldn't have ignored it. I wouldn't have like had an opinion about it. Right. Like, all right, cool, so that guy said that. But when you said it, I was like, I had to do a double take. And I was like, wow, okay, cool, let me hear what you have to say.
Amazing. Do you believe that human beings are in a fallen state?
Yes.
And what does that mean to be in a fallen state?
By mere virtue of incarnating in the flesh, in the third dimension, we have no choice. It is it's a fallen dimension. We, when we're undifferentiated, when we're with God, we are, we're risen.
Right.
And so just by the boundaries of the incarnated body is...
Amazing. So you believe in God?
Yes.
And who is God?
Oh, I can't say. That would be ignorant. In my fallen state, how could I possibly say that? You know, anything that we say or do in this fallen state is fallen. Fallen words, fallen actions. So a lot of times it's better just not to say anything at all.
Amazing. So are you still in a fallen state?
Yes.
Do you believe that you can overcome the fallen state?
As soon as I leave this body.
So you're not going to overcome until you leave the body, you think?
No.
Why not?
Well, because I have pain, I have pleasure, I have sensation, I have feelings, I have thoughts. These are all the experiences in the third dimension. And so as long as I have a body,
but
I'm
Christ came that you might overcome here on earth. You could have paradise on earth. And your body is just a house that you live in. But you can overcome the fallen state right here, right now on earth. You don't have to wait to die.
I believe we can walk with the Father. I believe that we can be at one with the Father. I believe that we can atone and you know, align with the Father. But just by virtue of being in the flesh, we remain fallen.
Amazing. And so, but is it the spirit that overcome the fallen state or the flesh?
The spirit is not in the fallen state ever.
Oh, it's not?
No, it's in the risen state. It's, you know, if you think about it in terms of like, you got the clouds, which is air, which is spirit, which is undifferentiated, which can go anywhere and be anything, and then it consolidates into rain, and then into the fallen state of ice. So we are all, as that piece of ice holds the essence of that, of the cloud, of the air, of the humidity, the human being holds that essence of our spiritual reality, but by mere virtue of us being in that hardened state like the ice, we're limited. We go from limitlessness to limitation in the flesh.
That's amazing.
Energy blockages. So exercises like pulling up from the perineum works the lower diaphragm. The belly going in and out works the middle diaphragm. This diaphragm, not so much with this exercise, but anytime you do any chanting or humming, one of my favorites is. Opens up the throat diaphragm. You see my voice changed. So keep your diaphragms relaxed. Keep them moving without straining them. You see when we, I have a tendency to do it. That's the only reason why I know this shit. Strain the voice. We start getting tense and straining the solar plexus. So exercises that relax
and keep fluidity in the diaphragms, well, good idea. You know, if you're into fitness, right? If you're into fitness, you're into the body. You're into all things body, right? So you're into that kind of stuff. That's what I talk about. That's what I do.
I read that or heard that you are of something called the Baha'i faith. Faith, what is that exactly?
I was in college when I started looking into religion, you know, and I was looking into all kinds of different religions. I had some Christian friends, and I came across the work of Alan Watts and Osho when I was on the internet and stuff. So I was exposed to God and different religions, and I enjoyed them. When I pursued Christianity, like I said before, you know, I've had some experiences that led me away from labeling myself as Christian, mainly the division between the people, you know, a lot of schism. I still hankered for religion. I still hankered for God. I wanted a community. I wanted to be a part of something. And my wife and I had moved to Springfield, Massachusetts, and I saw a commercial with different colored children playing together, and being multiracial myself in a biracial relationship, I was drawn to it. And in the commercial, it mentioned something about we are all different colored flowers within the garden of God. And I thought that was wonderful. So I started reading, I went to the website and I started reading the Baha'i scriptures. And so I decided when I was very young, right before we got married, that I wanted to be Baha'i.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm. And so do you label yourself as Baha'i?
No.
Baha'i?
I like the Baha'i principles because the Baha'i principles is about unity. But once again, I try to go back and say that I want to be a part of organized religion, but it just didn't stick for me.
Is Baha'i an organized religion?
Mm-hmm.
It is an organized. So you are part of an organized religion. It's just not Christianity. It's Baha'i.
Not any longer.
You're not part of Baha'i?
No, I was.
Baha'i. Oh, you're not?
Mm-hmm.
Why did you leave?
Again, the hypocrisy, the agenda.
Oh, I
think that anytime we're trying too hard in the physical plane in order to bring God's kingdom to earth, we become blinded by our own grandiosity. And you see it with basically every organized religion. I'm not sure God is meant to be organized in that way.
And so, but even though you say you're not a part of the organized aspect of it, you still have the Baha'i faith.
I believe in the principles. I'm not sure I abide by, you know, there are some things that I'm not okay with.
Do they teach about sin? They believe there is sin?
Mm-hmm.
How about good and evil?
Yes.
They do?
Mm-hmm.
And what is sin?
Well, with regard to good and evil, there's a spectrum, you know. It's almost like when we turn on and off these lights. When we turn the light on, darkness scatters. But if we dim it slightly, there's a relative darkness to the light. And so good and evil operate very much in the same way, in that there's light, and when there's an absence of light, there's darkness. And then to sin is essentially to allow the blindness that's a part of being in the darkness to guide our steps rather than the light.
Do you sin?
There are things I can't see in my fallen state, and so I miss. And I misinterpret or I misunderstand. But the moment I become enlightened and aware of the sin, it's no longer. And because I don't judge myself, I don't stay wrapped in it.
I think about anybody who's sharing anything that's coming from their heart as an artist. That's by banning Alex Jones, you're like saying this kind of art is not appropriate. This kind of information isn't appropriate. People shouldn't know these things. People shouldn't be subjected to these things. And that's not free. When you got Big Brother telling you what you can and can't look at and what is and isn't appropriate and who can and can't say something, it's an infringement upon your basic human rights. But we see that all over the place, and it's very insidious here, particularly in America, where we've got this political correctness disease. You know, it's almost like social Marxism. Thomas Jefferson says, the Tree of Liberty is watered with the blood of patriots and tyrants. meaning like us, people, the laymen, patriots were laymen. These weren't military industrial complex soldiers. They're us, people who want their own freedom.
We're coming to the end,
mm-hmm.
So I got to ask my fast questions.
Mm-hmm.
Are you a man?
Yes.
And not just a male, but a man.
A man.
And what is a man?
A man is one half of a whole, which is male and female. And so the masculine energy takes on leadership, aggression, forward moving, advancing energy. That's the type of energy that I carry into my family, I carry it into my business, I carry it into my life.
And love, what is love?
Love is creativity.
Love is creativity. Racism, do you believe racism exists?
You know, in our fallen state, anything that we concoct with our mind, we can truly believe and make real. But it's all a figment of our imagination, meaning that we can rise above it by changing our thoughts on things.
So is that you don't believe it exists? It's just another
person's
imagination?
It exists if you think it exists. Meaning like, if it exists for you, you're going to have that experience and you're going to attract that, and that's what's going to happen. And you can call it that. You know, but if you don't, you can have the same experience or similar experience as somebody else, but you see it for what it is, which is just ignorance.
I think it's amazing that you are married with 4 children, right?
Mm-hmm.
How is that for you?
Amazing.
You like it?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Are you working on any projects you'd like to promote right now?
Well, Strength Camp has grown from the back of my van to a dusty garage to our 8,000 square foot gym right now. And what we've done is we're teaching other young entrepreneurs, gym fitness coaches, how to own their own strength camp. So we're licensing Strength Camp. We teach them
how to market,
how to set up their business system. So that's really big on our plate right now.
And they can find that at your website?
Mm-hmm, strengthcamp.com.
And my final question,
mm-hmm.
Do you know what that is?
Did I have fun?
Yeah.
Yes, I did.
Good, uh-huh. Man. Thank you so much for coming.
Mm-hmm,
all
pleasure.
Right.
Next time on The Fallen State.
You are an incel.
The whole point about being an incel is you are an involuntary celibate.
And so you're thinking, now I'm 18, I'm going to go for a girl.
Yeah. But none of them wanted to be in a relationship or date me. And I was just like, I'll just keep trying. You know, there's plenty of fish in the sea. Yeah. So I kept trying and I kept trying for months and months and months. I got so desperate. I decided I'm going to have no standards at all. I'm going to go for any. I'm going to go for old women, ugly women. I just want someone to like me.
The old and ugly, what would they say?
Well, they would just turn me down, I guess.
Thanks for watching The Fallen State. We need your continued support. Donate to my nonprofit here. Subscribe and like the videos here. And tell everybody and their mama about the show.